Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Keedius, Altius, Fortius Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
All right, Sarah Hurstlin, you know, because you listen to the show, that I like to grade Evan's introductions, that little part there. If this was diving, I think degree of difficulty not all that high. I thought the technical
speaking merit, Latin's not easy.
No. E pluribus unimus. No, I think the delivery was fine. Artistic impression not that high. So overall, I give him 7.
That's high. I was going to go 7.5.
All right, fine. Great. All right, so you're not the Russian judge either. Oh, don't get in trouble. Don't get in trouble. That was my joke, Scott Soschnick's joke. That was my joke. So, Sarah, how much money are you getting from the government? That's an easy way to start. What are you doing in New York, Sarah? Tell us. What are you doing in New York? Are you asking for money? What are you doing?
I'm always asking
for money. I know that's part of your job. You ask
always,
for money.
Always asking for money. We are here celebrating 100 days out to the Paris Olympic Games. Paralympic Games shortly thereafter to follow, and hosting a media summit. We've got about 100 athletes from Team USA here in town. Some, I would say, officially still hopefuls. We have a lot of qualifying left to do, but we are celebrating what's to come.
100 days out, I'm sure for you, it doesn't sneak up on you. I think it sneaks up on a lot of people. How do you think about educating the public, which obviously loves the Olympics, but maybe is not so in tune to when exactly they are or what years they are? I assume this 100 days out is essentially the start of the Olympics from a commercial standpoint in your eyes. Is that right?
That's right. It's a marker. It's a marker that says start paying attention, because over the next 100 days, a huge number of athletes are going to achieve their dream of making the Olympic or Paralympic team. And then you're really going to want to be paying attention, because then we're playing for all the marbles.
All right. Now, when we do our events, you know, we get certain marks. We're like, where are we from a revenue standpoint? Where are we from a ticket standpoint? Give me the markers. Where does Team USA stand in terms of, let's say, the revenue metrics?
Yeah, I mean, we're right. We always need money. You know, we're privately funded.
Yep.
So the commercial environment.
Well, let's not just glance over that. I'm not sure people even now understand that other countries finance their Olympic teams. We do
differently from how we do it.
So just give a quick explainer, if you would, like how it works with the United States Olympic Committee.
Yeah, it's great. You're exactly right. In many countries, sport is part of their government infrastructure. In our country, it isn't, which means our Olympic Committee and Paralympic Committee is responsible for raising all of our own money privately, which we do both from the corporate business sector, certainly the media sector, but also increasingly relying on the philanthropic generosity of American people.
So why are we so good at the Olympics if we're not funding it in the direct way that so many other countries are?
It's a great question. And the long and short of it is because we have the most sophisticated sport infrastructure in this country that was really born out of an education-based sport model. School was a big part of where we all learned and started playing sport. Elementary school, I had field day. I don't know if anybody has field day anymore, but I had field day
all-star.
Color war field. Yeah, totally.
And then you go up through, you know, high school opportunities and into what is the envy of the world is our collegiate sports system. That was our pipeline and our development system. Increasingly, unfortunately, that's going in the wrong direction. But when you say, why is Team USA the best in the world? That's the answer.
So let me ask you this. Anything happens in sports, and right now I'll say NIL. It's a great example. Congress gets involved. Like, they want to have hearings. They know it's high profile. So why do they arm's length the argument of there should be federal funding for athletics?
I think they arm's length the argument on federal funding for anything. And we just get to fall into that play. But as you rightly said, America loves sport, right? We love sport in our country. And so it's a very sexy asset to attribute yourself with. And frankly, as I said, you know, we've had really good infrastructure for a long time. When the education-based system started declining, as those municipal budgets or education budgets were cut, the supply-demand capitalism of America took over. And all of a sudden, right, the demand didn't go away. And so the for-profit markets took over and started creating the supply for sport participation.
Pretend I'm the CEO of X financial firm, whatever it may be. Anyway. Give me the elevator pitch, if you would, as to why it's beneficial for me to have an affiliation with you at this time.
Team USA is one of the very few things in this country we can all agree on. It is a unifier.
The only thing, maybe. Yeah.
But it is.
I'm
also,
sure we can find something we all want to yell at each other about. Let's be serious. Come on.
But look, it is fundamentally it's a source of national pride, but it is more importantly a model of human achievement. And in many ways, we're in the human performance business, and the ability to showcase that across such a diverse number of sports and different types of human beings in this country, frankly, is smart business.
And I'm going to be very nice to you right now.
Okay.
Because we've dealt with each other for a long time. Name your top sponsors. Who's doing a lot for you? You want to thank who? Who's doing? I know you were going to get there anyway, so I forgot to just get it out of the way.
I want to thank Delta.
Delta.
I want to thank.
They were terrible on my last trip, but anyway.
Did you see the metal shape Hershey's Reese's that just came out?
Hershey's. I did see those.
Oh, yeah. I did.
Very cool.
I didn't. What? Tell me.
Pick up a little new chocolate. There's an Olympic medal shaped Reese's. It's like I can't call it a peanut butter cup.
I hope it's covered in gold. Is it gold foil?
It's a good question. I haven't opened mine yet.
Okay.
I just have the package.
Okay.
Might be.
All right.
Should be.
Okay.
Should be.
It should be gold.
Hershey's, great, great supporter. Not surprisingly, Nike Ralph yep. Lauren, mm-hmm. who outfit and not just outfit, but help our teams feel really proud about the way they look because they tailor clothes and make everybody
feel
good.
Is there
good.
Still an RFP for that, like the outfitting? How does that process work? Because, I mean, it's a big deal. The opening ceremony, the closing ceremony, a lot is made of it. There's a classic Ralph Lauren look. I mean, I'm just curious, where do we stand in the length of that contract? And what's the RFP process like?
Recently renewed through the LA Games in 2028.
Okay.
So that door's closed for a minute anyway.
Right.
Oh, Sarah, I want to go back to something you said about one of the things that makes American so good at the Olympic level, the college sports enterprise. I asked you about this morning, but I do want to hear you talk a little more about how concerned you are and what Team USA is doing in the face of all these changes at the college level, including some that think that money is going to be more concentrated than ever and into the big revenue sports, which leaves Olympic sports potentially on the outside. What are you guys doing to try to ensure that whatever happens in college sports, that sports like men's gymnastics or men's volleyball or women's soccer continue to have a place and a strong place at the college level?
Absolutely. Advocating at every turn for people to understand the importance of that collegiate-based sports system, not just collegiate football, but the diversity of sport on campus, right? Young people come into college and want a broad experience, and sport is a huge part of the experience of young people. As I say, the demand's not going anywhere, and so the supply shouldn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But we need administrators, university presidents, conference commissioners, the NCAA, even legislators, both at the state level and at the federal level, to understand as you're making choices about how you think about the future of collegiate sport, recognize the importance of broad-based programming on campuses, and don't make decisions that are going to have unintended consequences that reduce sport funding, reduce opportunities for people.
Now, let me be like your PR guy here, right? Can't you just tell anyone who votes against this, like, here's your soundbite, because that's where we are, right? You have a short attention span. Here's your soundbite. You hate America. There's your soundbite. You vote against this funding. You hate America. You can do this.
Because I think that only works once.
We need to do it once, but at least from the athletic standpoint. I mean, I know they have the wherewithal to download football and basketball and NIL. Past that point, I'm not sure what the purview allows for.
Well, you can be sure. This summer, as we watch the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games, that we'll draw every connection we can with the university where they trained.
I love it.
And you'll see a lot of it.
Who are the athletes that are ready to break out?
Well, there's 53 sports, Scott.
All right. Well, but you know,
106 of them.
There are the Wheaties box athletes, and there's gold medal winners that I don't really hear a lot about afterwards.
We're going to take 800 plus athletes to Paris across 53 sports. And over the course of, well, let's say the first 17 days of the Olympics, Team USA is, I mean, if you look at history, we're in the 100 plus medal range over 17 days. That's a lot of medals in a day, let alone the competitions that are going to happen. We have a lot of incredible, and we'll come home with more than 100, maybe 150 individual U.S. athletes with a medal around their neck.
One of the things I think, you obviously know this, Scott, you may know this also, one of the interesting things, the way Team USA selects its athletes for some events is that you have to perform at trials. It's different than it is in a lot of other
Dan
nations.
And Dave. Yeah, Dan and Dave. Yeah,
exactly.
There's risk.
Yeah.
Great risk.
So when I think about for Team USA, for NBC, for any of these brands that you're talking about that want to work with athletes, there's a little bit of risk or uncertainty in some ways, right? Of we're talking now in April of partnering with players who could trip at once in the trials and suddenly could get sick, right? Suddenly aren't performing in Paris. There seems to be a little bit of uncertainty there that I imagine is kind of tricky from a business standpoint of figuring out who to promote and when to promote them if you're not 100% sure they're going to be on the starting line or on the blocks in Paris.
There's no question about it. And yet at the same time, isn't that the beauty, right? With
yeah,
sport, you got to play.
Meritocracy, right?
You got to play.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing. And as you said, you know, our Olympic trials in some cases will have athletes who are more qualified than some around the world who won't make the games. And so sometimes making the team is actually the hardest part. Hmm. And we're going to see that play out, which is you asked about 100 days. Why now is the time to start really paying attention? Because the pressure right now is probably as intense. The stage isn't as bright, but the pressure is as intense for these guys right now as it will be in Paris.
So what does your schedule look like for the next 100 days? Are you bouncing from wrestling trials to track trials to swimming trials? Are you staying put because you're obviously going to be in Paris for a long time?
Literal trials and tribulations for the next 100 days.
What is your schedule?
I'm a little all over. I'm going from here to Washington, D.C.,
okay,
where I'm going to advocate strongly on behalf of broad-based sport on college campuses.
Don't tell them they hate America.
Who are you meeting with? Who are you meeting with? Those America haters. Who are you meeting with?
Celebrating 100 days out, which we're excited to do. And then I'm going to wrestling trials. And yes, I will. I will bounce around a little bit. I obviously, I have a lot of work to do, right? As an administrator, my job isn't just to be a fan. But I will go to a number of trials. They're great opportunities for me to meet, to listen, to hear. And I always try to hear from athletes directly when I can. After their competitions, after they've had the stress taken off a little bit, but it's a really good opportunity to hear questions, concerns, things that are coming up with athletes that guide us into how we think about what needs to get done before we get to Paris. And Scott, you mentioned, you know, you could get sick. Our job in the next 100 days is to do everything we can to put bubble wrap them up.
Yeah. 100%. We're chatting with Sarah Hirschlin, the CEO of Team USA. That was my mid-interview reset.
Oh, I thought you had a question after
that. I saw you were getting ready to go, so I thought I'd take care of that and let you do your thing.
I was actually going to, but when you say bubble wrap, what are the policies? What are you telling athletes not to do this? Make sure you're doing more of that. What does it look like if I'm an athlete and I want to make sure that not only am I able to go, but I'm performing my best when I'm there?
It's a balance of art and science, right? We bring science to play. We do a lot of research. We actually learned a lot. Silver lining of the pandemic is we learned a lot about illness prevention. We'll put measures in place to be thoughtful about how to maybe go the extra step or the extra mile of understanding when and where people are most likely to get sick.
Can you give us an example, a little extra mile of maybe something we're not familiar with that we don't know you're doing?
Wear masks when you travel.
That I know. It's really, that's the basic.
It's that simple.
I mean, give yourself a fighting chance, right?
Any pushback from some athletes?
Who knows?
We'll find out.
I mean, this will be the place where individuals make decisions and choices, right? That's why I say it's a mix of art and science. We're humans and we all make decisions every day. And sometimes you say, well, I know I probably should do this, but I didn't. And so that's the key, right? That you see elite athletes at this stage, their discipline and ability to stay disciplined kicks in a way that is extraordinary for most of us.
Another legacy that I think of the 20, I guess, 21 Tokyo COVID games, many athletes traveled with ring lights and they were doing media hits from their dorm rooms. It's now commonplace at like the NFL draft to have ring lights in players' living rooms or dens with their family, the whole thing. Are we going to see more of that? I'm curious if there's other things about the way that you guys did things technology-wise, media-wise during the pandemic that you guys thought, oh, you know, maybe this is permanent now. Maybe this just makes our life easier or better. And as a result, we're going to implement this moving forward.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
I think you can't replace in-person interaction. And athletes enjoy that as much as anybody, right? So they don't want to be tucked in a room behind a screen and a light all the time. But in advance of competitions, if they're really being cautious, or I think actually what it's done is it's sort of opened up access. I can't travel, but I can give you 45 minutes. And so I think in some cases it's actually opened up access and allowed them to do more with less commitment. That's been helpful to a lot of them because they're all trying to build their brands. They're trying to tell their stories. That's gotten a little easier.
I take a good chuckle. Like I've talked to Dick Ebersol, I mean, so many years ago where he understood the fundamental success for NBC at the games is storytelling.
That's right.
And it's like, I listen to the media narrative these days. It's like we've discovered gold. Storytelling matters. Like you hear that about Caitlin Clark and some others right now. Where is this discovery? This has been going on for a very long time, at least at the Olympic level.
It has 100%. And it's what America has loved about the Olympics is the introduction to individuals who, frankly, often exceed their own expectations. And we get to share in that. And then we want to understand who are these people. And so, you know, we've got every human being has a great story. The question is, can you find somebody who can pull it out of them?
We spent part of today at the 100 Days Out asking athletes what their other job is. For a lot of athletes, obviously, being the best in the world at insert sport here does not always pay the bills. And some fascinating answers from cleaning semi-trucks to working coding to
doing... And some interns at NBC scribbling furiously. I can't read my notes.
Well, yeah, I do think that one of the great things about the Olympics is, I mean, there's great stories in every sport, but just the abundance of diversity of people and also diversity of backgrounds and socioeconomic and religious and ethnic, whatever it all is, Team USA has everything on it. And that does seem like, to your point, Scott, that it was an untapped or maybe not tapped enough piece of the Olympic storytelling is telling those little stories about the para taekwondo athlete who's washing semi trucks in his spare time, because that's what he needs to do to make sure that he can compete on the biggest stage
to pay the bills. There's no question. The diversity and breadth of what Team USA represents is, and when we say it's the most diverse team in the world.
So one question on the athlete compensation. We saw last week World Athletics, which is the governing body for track and field, announced that it was going to give gold medal, silver medal, and or gold at first, but then medal bonuses for athletes who win medals at the Olympics. That's never happened before from a sport international governing body paying athletes for their success at the Olympics. I know that you guys give medal bonuses for USA athletes. Am I right in thinking that's the future, that flash forward however amount of years, and I'm curious how long you think it takes, that athletes are being more directly compensated for their success at the Olympic level, which again, hasn't happened that much in the past?
I think the sports that are going to be successful and strong over the long term will have to get there. And there are some who simply right now, the resources would be crippling.
Yep.
Obviously, track and field globally is a massive sport with great popularity, a very strong commercial business, and the resources to allocate. And so they made a choice. And I give them a lot of credit. I do think that other sports are going to have that kind of growth and forward-thinking mentality to stay strong and to keep the best athletes attracted to wanting to be a star in that sport.
I feel like she dropped a challenge before. Like, it just went by. We didn't address it. But, like, you know, it takes somebody good to get the stories out of them. I feel that was a challenge for both of us. Is there something you're not telling us, Sarah Hirschlin? No, is there something you're dying to share? But it's like two people in the room said, don't say that. There has to be something. And now this is our job. I really want to put the gauntlet down.
Look, there's 800 plus athletes who are going to come to Paris. That's a lot of stories to tell. So everybody's got an opportunity to find a unique story and connect with different people. And I think there are lots of channels and lots of outlets, and there are athletes who are gonna share their story and build their voice on TikTok, and there are athletes who are going to do it on NBC, and there are athletes who are going to do it in other places. My only point is it isn't going to be one place, right? It was 20 years ago, Dick Ebersol's brainchild, or however many years ago, on NBC, and we relied on that. And my point is now, I don't think we have to rely only on that, because there are so many ways to tell stories, and athletes have the ability to do that on their own, in their own voices.
Does that scare the bejesus out of NBC when the athlete realistically doesn't need them anymore?
Well, but they do.
Well, to show the game itself, yes.
Right. We all do, because we're dying to see the competition and we still want to know who's going to win.
Right. But afterwards, they can push that camera and microphone aside and say, join me on my Instagram. I'm going to tell you about that great gold medal moment.
That's right.
You and I have been talking about this for years, Scott. I don't think any athlete has, or there's some probably, but very few athletes have actually figured that out, that piece out.
Well, when the Antetokounmpos went and got, like, what did they get? Where'd they go?
Yeah, the Chick-fil-A drive-thru after winning the championship. The stuff that he did with his brother on Instagram Live after the Bucks won, I thought was amazing, but he hasn't tapped that into anything.
But this is Sarah's point about how,
like, maybe you do in some ways need that without it, it's a lot harder to... As effective as you and I think it might be, that it's a little bit harder to fully get the story out there or do it in the right way, maybe.
If I want someone to disagree with me, I'll just stay at home. I don't need to come to work for that. Like, come on, Evan.
So, Sarah, one thing that we talk about a lot at Sportico is it feels like every Olympic cycle has like one big 30,000 foot view concern. And there was Zika in Brazil, and there's been geopolitics, and there's been COVID. In talking to folks about the Olympics in Paris, there seems to be a lot of concern about security. Right now, I'm curious how much of your time you're spending on that, what that looks like as we sit 100 days out from a huge gathering in Paris.
Well, tell me about athletes floating down the Seine. Good, sane or insane?
Water health as well.
You need a little nasal French.
Pardon. Chapeau.
I mean, look, I would say in some ways you could say the fact that we're talking about security is a great gift, because security is always a significant consideration in any major sporting event, particularly when you're in the middle of a huge metropolitan city like Paris. At the same time, this isn't the first time anybody's ever put on a massive sporting event, right? There are systems in place. There are, frankly, the world's governments are all reasonably used to this. Our government has a classification for events like this that sort of triggers them to think about it differently. And we do work closely with the U.S. government. The reason I think that security is a louder conversation now than it has been is because of the distinction in the way they're doing the opening ceremony.
Outdoors. For
It's always been sort of this model of we do it in the big stadium and you get people in the stadium, and we put people in stadiums all the time, so we know how to do that. Putting people on boats and floating them down a river is a different thing. It's a different way to think about it. And therefore, everybody goes, ooh, but what does that mean for security? And it's a legitimate and understandable question. And my answer is, what it means for security is you have a different kind of plan. It doesn't mean that you have no plan. It just means you have a different kind of plan than what you have when people are in a stadium.
I feel like we're getting a return to normalcy in the Olympic movement. I mean, Asia was obviously time zones and we have disease. That happens. France, we're getting a little closer to time zones, network like that. Then can I look forward a little bit towards LA 28? sort of where, what does that do for Team USA? What does that do for the Olympic movement? What does that do for sport in general?
Game changing. Sport changing, I would actually say. I think that, you know, it's been since 1996 since we will have had a summer games, which is markedly larger and sort of the scale is bigger than the winter games, on U.S. soil. It was before we had technology, before we had the ubiquitous, right? When was the iPhone? Like 2008 or something, right?
I still have the original,
by the way. This was 1996, which doesn't sound like that long ago for those of us who are...
But we had good marketing. There was a Coca-Cola
older,
Olympics.
But it was a long time ago. And so it's been a very long time since this country has had the ability to buy a ticket to an Olympic Games down the street. And I think the impact of that is going to be profound because there's a sense of pride in Team USA. Now you're talking about a sense of pride in actually hosting the biggest sporting event in the world and having 205 other countries come and compete here. And, you know, there are a lot of individual athletes, right? We'll have the largest delegation we've ever had in history because we'll have more sports and athletes from all of those sports know they've got a chance. When you host a games in your country, you automatically qualified, presuming that you in some sports meet certain standards, which our job is to make sure we meet. So athletes from every sport that's on the program get a bite at the apple in their home country. And it's a little bit like saying to Duke, what's it going to mean to play in Cameron? It's a difference maker. I'm a Duke grad, by the way.
That's 4 years out. Let's go a little bit further. Salt Lake City looking... There's a lot of confidence, to put it bluntly, about Salt Lake City. Where are you right now in your confidence that after the LA Games, we are going to have a Winter Olympics not too far away in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, very, very confident, but we got to do the work. So we're close. We still have a little bit of work we've got to do yet in the next couple of months. And presuming that all of that goes as smoothly as it should, I think we'll have a games to back end this next decade.
You have to change all your marketing material. It doesn't only host an NBA team, but also an NHL team. Wink, wink.
It's becoming quite a market.
That's what Ryan Smith tells me. It's becoming quite a market. Well, something out of left field, if I may, because you mentioned Winter Olympics, and that's where I start dreaming. My son, 14 years old, big-time hockey player. And I got to tell you, like, the professionalization of sport at 14, I'm not sure when it really, but probably 10, 11, I didn't participate. I actually told one of his coaches, and I'm not going to embarrass him here, but a former professional player who took over, one kid said, hey, coach, can we go swimming after the game? We played two games a day. And the coach, I swear to you, looked at a bunch of eight-year-olds and said, if we're okay with swimming, we have to be okay with losing. I knew at that moment, I am out of here, dude. You're out of your mind. Like, that would worry me in your position. That would really worry me. That kids are like, forget this. I don't want to play sports
anymore. It does. Two things worry me. One is what it costs.
Oh, that, well, don't. Well, thank you for making me weep right now. Yeah.
And the second is...
I'm gonna reach for my tuition statement.
Right?
Yeah, go ahead. Hold on.
You want kids... Number one, you want kids having fun in sport before it gets too competitive. There's a lot of data research that says you shouldn't allow young people to keep score. You definitely shouldn't rank teams. Some countries actually have regulations in place to sort of mandate that.
You're
and the reality
rankings,
is they find is participation rates and people, kids staying in sport go way up. The amount of fun they have go way up and the physical fitness of their society goes way up.
A lot of Scandinavian countries do that. They're like, 100%. You have to play in your home district. You can't be ultra here. I'm 100%. Not on video, but here's my tuition for hockey
for
next year. For sport. That's just to play for the team. Forget about equipment. Forget about travel. Forget about food. The kids do like the food.
It's a lot of numbers, Scott.
Too many commas. That's what it's too many commas. I am not at all happy with what I've got to do. But
it's not good.
No.
It's not good.
It's not good. Eben, speaking of not good.
What?
Transfer to you. What do you look at me? Why?
So
I got a unique opportunity.
I've heard Scott whine about the youth
me,
sports
wine?
Thing for.
Wine?
Yeah, I think whine is fair. About the youth sports structure in the U.S. for a long time.
I think I have a very valid argument.
This feels like, in some ways, the like end stage of the thing that you talked about at the beginning, which is probably like the end stage of what has made America so good at all of these sports or many of these sports for so long, and why our Olympic team has been so good for so long is that there is all this youth structure and maybe we are getting too far, but in some ways I hear some of these stories and I'm like, this, I understand why we're amazing at hockey, because some of the stories that you're telling about how professional and how advanced your son's hockey was when he was 7 years old, let alone now when he's in high school.
If he doesn't burn out, right.
Yeah, and that's the concern, right?
The pendulums always swing, right? And your goal is to hope that if it swings too far one way, you don't have to swing it too far the other way before you bring it back into the right balance. But there is a balance. There's a balance of driving performance. And at the same time, your point, it, what you don't want is a 9-year-old saying, I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
That's not a best. That's not our best day.
We're not going to have any swim outfit controversies. You know, there's one that pops up all the time. There's always one. There's the on the field stuff, which I love. Then there's always one for some reason we can cover. I would say with 98%.
Yeah,
there's 98% certainty we can cover most of the sports business of the Olympics before the games. But there's always something. Is what do you got up here? What do you got that where you're keep an eye on this? This could be a sports business story during the games.
Sports business story during the games.
Yeah, what might pop up in Paris?
That's a good question. I don't know what might pop up in Paris, but something will. Something
right.
will.
Scott's asking you to do his job for him as well. Yeah.
That's what you're for.
I'm not projecting what your story is going to be. I don't know.
Well, I loved it when years ago. I don't remember which games it was, but remember when Michael Phelps?
Yeah.
He showed up for the cover of Sports Illustrated. Was it?
Yeah.
And he was a Under Armour athlete at the time.
Wearing Nike sweatpants.
And he was wearing Nike sweatpants, right? And we got tipped off on it. We wrote it. And
there will absolutely be commercial-related issues.
Yeah, something happens.
And, I mean, you've got 800 different athletes in a bunch of different sports, many of whom have endemic sponsors. We're putting athletes in, as you know, Nike, Ralph Lauren apparel, and the equipment. There's performance equipment, performance uniforms, lots of brands and companies who want in. Always will be a little bit of commercial messiness.
There's probably no sporting event, maybe the World Cup, that kind of guards its commercial rights and who has access to what more than the Olympics. Do you ever have to remind, are you Nike only for your shoes just to make sure that you're never making a mistake? I'm curious if you ever have to remind yourself like, oh, I can't wear this logo in this specific setting.
Having grown up in the commercial business and sport, I'm pretty loyal to where my bread is buttered.
Got it.
All right. Well, Sarah Hirschlin, I usually let Eben close the story or the show. We try to distract him to see if we can throw him off. He sometimes does well.
So annoying.
I'm not sure in the director's chair how he'll do. It's a handheld mic. It's a little different than normal, but give it a shot.
Got it. A special thank you to Sarah Hirschlin, the CEO of the USOPC.
See, this is where we just discussed things right past.
You can find Sarah on Twitter.
Do you know the Twitter handle? Let's see if he knows the handle.
USOPC underscore CEO.
Hey, wait a minute.
Time out.
Somebody picked that for you. Who's responsible for your
Somebody
Twitter handle?
Did pick that.
Would you give it of your? You're giving your own volition. Would you have included an underscore in your Twitter handle?
I am very
anti-underscore. There's no reason for that to exist. And he's got an underscore. Like, you can do anything in the world to differentiate yourself.
Tough crowd.
Well, it's a hard
Thank
keyboard.
You. This is my life.
Scott, if you're going to find things to pick on, like an underscore is like pick Battles Wars.
Oh, I pick them all, but I don't ignore the little ones
Does
either.
Not discriminate.
I pick them
all. Does not discriminate on size
but
of the
But that
battle.
Didn't answer the... Yeah. Who was it? Flag football guy had an underscore, and Eben went into our interview thinking that he had an ally, and the guy said, oh, I hate the underscore. Somebody gave it to me.
He's got a hyphen.
No,
that's what I
think.
Yeah,
likes underscores.
But he's, yeah, but he's exactly, no, yeah. it's nobody, no way. Underscore Williams in the is. Twitter, which I just there's no reason. There's a guy out there who has at Eben. He's official Eben. Must make you feel terrible.
Makes me feel upset. All right, exactly. You can find Sarah at USOPC underscore
well.
CEO.
Yeah, tell me about Cora Veltman. What are you going to say
on Twitter at Novi underscore Williams? You can find Scott at Soshnik. Tell him how annoying he is. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron, Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, who's in the room with us. We'd like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.